Hello, everyone. As you know, October is a month that I'm dedicating to everything to do with breast cancer. And so in the series of interviews that you heard me talking about, and you might have seen some of the interviews already, today I'm talking to Kirsten Nussgruber, who is, you can see her smiling away when I'm pronouncing her last name. Kirsten and I met at an event, and there's a very special energy about her. So I decided to talk to her today because not only is she a breast cancer survivor and a thriver, not once, but twice. And today she's running her own practice that's dedicated to helping women who have just been diagnosed, who have to make the hard decisions which way to go with their treatments. She is a certified nutritionist. She's also a mentor to women with breast cancers. Kirsten, I'm so happy that we got to connect. And, you know, and your story is very much in line with what I'm doing this month, and that's covering the whole topic of how estrogen can impact hormones, how preventable breast cancer can be, is, how much we want to shift from awareness to actually doing something about things. But one more thing that's been coming up for me very strongly in my observations is that there's such a big group of us who are the healthy sick person, I call it, right? Is that person who's been eating organic, who has been, you know, off gluten, and who understands that sugar is not particularly your best friend. You know, who's been not using chemical cleaners at home for a long time. And the list goes on and on and on. Yet, that person can be diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. That person can be diagnosed with breast cancer. And I know this is my story. I was a healthy, sick person, right, who would be packing lunch to go to work and who did not want to order in pizza while all my colleagues were living off pizzas late at night when I used to work in advertising. Yet I was the one who was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease when I was 36, and it seems like everybody else did not have any problems, right? And so I know you have a somewhat similar story. And so first of all, welcome to today's call. And I would love to hear more about what got you to the place you are here today.
Well, thank you, Magdalena. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And yes, like you quite rightly say, it isn't necessarily only the person that you can identify as living a pretty unhealthy lifestyle. And in my case, if I can delve into that a little bit, my story, it was in a way similar, although at first glance you think, oh, it's probably because of her family background. Because you see, I grew up in a family that was kind of marred by chronic disease, especially on my mother's side. We had rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune disease as well, and breast cancers and cervical cancers. Kind of there's a thread running through that line. And our family dealt with it in a way. First of all, it was the cancer diagnosis was kind of like a death sentence. So it was treated very, very severely, very state of shock. However, there wasn't anything else done to kind of figure out what could be the root cause, other than just accepting the fact, well, it runs in the family, and that's probably, it's just your turn, you are next. And in a way, I was kind of shrouded with that as well. And you have this at the back of your mind. And, you know, knowing what I know now, you know, thoughts are so powerful. So it's just I consider your brain, you have these back drawers, and you have these thoughts that kind of are uncomfortable and are scary. And you kind of put them in the back drawer and, you know, kind of shut the drawer, probably lock it and throw away the key and just hope you don't have to access it. And that's kind of how I grew up a little bit as well, thinking, well, I hope I don't get it, but not consciously figuring out what can I do, or is there something I can do, you know, taking it one step back. So when I was diagnosed at 39, which is on my mother's side, actually passed away. She battled with breast cancer, which then metastasized to the liver. She battled with that for 5 years. And when I was diagnosed, my aunt had actually passed away 15 years prior to that. But at that time, my mother was in the middle of battling her recurrence of breast cancer. So for me, first of all, the thought got confirmed, like, well, here you've been thinking about it, now it's your turn. But also there was something else that came up inside of me in this whole motion, in this whole moment of complete shock and despair, is that, oh no, it was this kind of inside voice screaming, saying, I do not want to end that same way. I do not want to go down that same path. And I need to be able to do something. And that's kind of what I dedicated my care to personally. But at the same time, I was also already, I had turned my passion, which is nutrition and figuring out what nutrition does for us. I was busy turning that hobby that I had for years into my new profession when I was diagnosed. Yeah. So it kind of all came together. Okay, I remember very vividly my professors, because I was in Germany at the time, saying to me, you know, obviously with your diagnosis, you can shelve everything. You know, we don't need to sit for the midterm exams and so on and so forth. And I said to them, you don't understand. I said, this is exactly what I need to do now, is I will deal with my cancer, but at the same time, continue to educate myself, because I want to get to the root cause. I need to try and figure out what's happening here.
So mean they said that because they thought you're going to die?
No, I think they just said, because, you know, usually when we get such a diagnosis and we have to deal with cancer, it becomes all consuming, and that's what you want to focus on,
which
is true.
Right.
You know, and I've gone through it twice. In no ways I want to in any way belittle that, the effect that happens on you when you're going through that diagnosis and you have to try and figure out what to do. And, you know, we can talk about that a little bit more now as well. Moving from this just accepting, well, it is my turn now, it's running in the family, kind of there is this innate knowledge saying, no, first of all, let's figure out, do you actually have the BRCA1, BRCA2? Two of the possible genes that could exist, and I mean the most well publicized and researched ones. In my case, actually, I was negative for both, even though my mother and aunt had breast cancer, but we all had different breast cancers. No, it's just, you need to have a purpose as well. Mm. And I think going now into when you just diagnosed, you're dealing with that initial complete overwhelm, that shock, that numbness, you need to have a purpose besides dealing with your cancer. And for me, that purpose was absolutely continuing with my studies. And, you know, I had surgery in hospital and I was studying. When I was recovering, I forced myself to, it was tough, but I forced myself to at least a couple of hours a day dedicating to studying, because I wanted to not have those midterms postponed. I wanted to, you know, find out as much as I possibly could to try and get to the root cause.
Yeah.
Because you see, why does cancer happen? Why does it develop? And to just say, well, it runs in your genes, it's such a simplistic view. That doesn't explain, for example, why you have twins that have the same genetic makeup. One of them might get breast cancer, the other one never does. You know, you have to look at other things, and it's that whole internal environment that we can influence with a whole host of things. Including nutrition, of course, that plays a huge role, but also other lifestyle factors that we need to consider. And I had alluded to it before, your thoughts, right? I actually had part of my training at the time, my nutrition training in Germany, where we had, it was fascinating, we had kind of a reading done on us, and what came up, this was before I was diagnosed, what came up for me was, and she pulled me aside, the lecturer at the time, she was a bit concerned, she said, breast cancer is coming up in your aura, and she says, is there something going on? And I'm going, well, my mother has just been, you know, re-diagnosed, I'm fine. I'm okay, my mother. And so So she says, no, this is not, she says, this is not related, this is to you, this line is directly to you. Are you worried? Are you scared? Are you concerned? Is there something going on there that you're going to get it? And a month later, I was diagnosed.
Wow.
So while I'm not trying to say it was my fault, I was thinking about it. It's not as simplistic as that, by all means, but I mean, the thoughts had been there for years in the background. And like I said, I didn't do anything about it. They were uncomfortable. I did not know what do I do with them. They were just there. They were put in the back drawer. But in a way, that also contributed to this internal environment that couldn't deal with these cancer cells or these normal cells that turned cancer cells. And so there are different things we need to focus on. And then also once we are diagnosed, then going forward, it's just as important to focus on the power that our thoughts have, our emotions have, that kind of energetic environment that we have around us, hugely impactful, even though we're going to experience the raw emotions that are associated with such a diagnosis. You are desperate. You are, you know, you want to hide and you want to cry. You go through moments where you literally sometimes wonder, isn't it better to die than to go through all of this? And you see people have gone through treatments and then they re-diagnosed. I mean, my mother was re-diagnosed. What's my path? A lot of these very, very desperate thoughts, emotions come up, and the wrong thing is to suppress them at the time. Okay, so you really need them to bubble up. You need to allow that to express and come out. That is the most natural thing to do. And when you give yourself permission and the space to do that, kind of it's like a cleansing process. When you go through that, you will come out on the other side and be able to be a little bit more focused. Like, how do I tackle this now?
So can I ask you, like, if were you prior to the diagnosis, were you that person who was taking care of yourself, eating organic food, you know, having a pretty good diet, all of that good stuff? Or were you like somewhere in between, or like where were you with those things?
It's a good question. I would consider myself healthy. Yes. I was not overweight. I was active. We were eating right. We were eating organic, not everything. We were also living in Germany at the time, where the quality of the food is very different. Yeah. You know, you just don't have to deal with all these genetically modified foods anyway. You know, a lot of things are banned in the European Union that are not banned in the United States. So just to give you a little side thing, just by living in Munich, we lost weight eating the same way. I mean, weight in terms of, we didn't have to lose weight, but we noticed it that we did. Anyway.
Yeah.
So yes. Did we smoke? No. Did we drink excessive alcohol? No. Just socially. Yes, we basically lived a healthy lifestyle. However, when you look at that, you can really, you can still tweak it. You can still make sure, you know, there are certain things you can still do.
And that's going to be my next question. So just want to frame it very clearly. If you were to turn back the time, what would you have done differently, you know, to really prevent it at 100%? And I'm talking about everything from lifestyle to thought process to where you are emotionally, spiritually, you know, just the whole looking at life in totality.
I guess what I would have done nutritionally, first of all, is being a little bit more vigilant about ingredients and a little bit less dependent on packaged foods. That has been a big change going forward. I've become kind of a label Nazi. I'm sorry to use that word, but really I was not doing that before, and there are so many hidden ingredients that we just don't need to expose our bodies to. Also, I think I would a lot more work on the emotional side, the understanding the impact that our thoughts have, and that suppressed emotions have. Now, in my case, especially with my first cancer, when I was diagnosed, I also knew there was this underlying wisdom that was telling me, you know exactly why this has happened, because if it hadn't happened, you would not now pay attention to, in my case, it was a relationship in my life that I knew I needed to figure out how I dealt with it. It was a kind of a relationship where the other party was not going to change. Nothing was going to ever be different in terms of the responses towards me, but I needed to figure out how I'm going to deal with that emotional stress and those suppressed emotions. There was a lot of work done that needed to be done on that front, which I had been exposed to, let me think, about 5 years prior to my breast cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I had that first initial inkling that this was something I needed to work on. You know how we kind of get led to a situation where we are confronted with a scenario where we're learning. And in my case, I attended a conference here in New York, the Omega Institute, and I was introduced to Dr. Brian Weiss, hypnotherapy, and he did a group hypnotherapy session with 450 people in the room. And to me, that was my first ever experience. And kind of I innately knew this was what I needed to focus on, yet at that point in time, I didn't take it any further. So becoming a lot more aware of when we get these signs and signals of, you know, in our path of development and growth, when things kind of come up, they don't come up out of the blue. This was a very particular sign. When I was diagnosed, one of the other things that immediately came up for me was, I need to focus on that right now. And luckily, I you know, I knew someone that I could turn to, and that was the path for me. You see, I was more conscious about what else did I need to do. You know, when you are in a relationship, you have a relationship. Interactions, when you have certain arguments or when certain things happen and you almost have physical pain, like emotional pain, like in my heart chakra, there would be a sure sign that there's stuff there that needs to be released, and that can turn in a way toxic just as much as pesticides in food or you know, in our skincare, in our you know, the additives that are put into our cosmetics, just as that over time can lead to the body's toxic load just being too much for the body to deal with. Yeah. You have that same effect with these unsuppressed emotions. And so going back to answer your question very simply is, I would have paid more attention to this particular relationship in my life and how I needed to overcome it, because we focus too much on we need to resolve the situation with that person. And very often that's just not going to happen, because unless that person has that same realization, you are never going to meet. And I was focusing too much on that. You know, people were giving you advice and, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Did you talk about it? And what I would say is, you don't understand. We cannot talk about that. We are not. It is never going to change. People around me would sort of feel or say, you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. Yeah. And they kind of also, I'm glad you brought this up, this point, because it's I think it's just really important to remember that as much as family and friends want to be supportive, some of the worst advice you would ever get is from them. And people are not experts in that. And so it's really, really important to work with a professional when it comes to things like that. You know, where, it's because people don't know what the heck is going on, and they are not trained to be dispensing professional advice.
Yeah. No, they're not. And they, also, I mean, you have to understand that that's something you need to work on, and that is something you can work on. Yeah. Okay, this was just something that I really stumbled into along the way, because I grew up very traditionally, you know, along the lines of, if you have a problem, then you go and see a psychologist, for example, or a psychotherapist. And I'm not, please understand, they have a role to play, absolutely, and they help many. I want to talk harshly about their professions. I think they have a place in society. I'm saying for me and for many of us, you know, what needed to be done is to give that emotional release work, to get that those stuck emotions out.
And who did you work with? Who did you work with to get that process going?
I worked with a hypnotherapist.
Right.
And I know that might sound scary to many people, but because that's just because we've heard about hypnosis in the media.
Yeah.
And we've seen, you know, the entertainment use of hypnosis.
Yeah.
Which then gets people to do silly things and you can't remember what you did. And I want to make it quite clear that hypnotherapy is absolutely not like that. And let's take the word hypnosis out of that and put in and replace it with extreme relaxation, in which you are fully conscious and you are fully aware of what is going on around you, but you are so deeply relaxed that it's a very, very nice place to be. And that allows you to access your subconscious. You know, things can come up for you if you are ready and if you want that process to happen.
Yeah.
Another important point to say.
Yeah.
So
I'm glad that you clarified that, because I have to say, you know, I couldn't stop smoking for years, and I will always go back to it, and I'd be off cigarettes for 2 years, go back to it. And the last time I smoked, it was for 3 years, and I just could not stop. I would do it for a month, I would go back to it. It just felt like being completely enslaved to a cigarette, and anybody with addictions would understand that. And especially given the work that I do, right? And so, you know, I went to see a hypnotist. And with one session and 4 hours of being hypnotized, and exactly the way you describe it, you're not passing out, there is no stage, there is no audience, it's just you and a therapist, and that extreme relaxation you're talking about, you know, and it's been a couple of years now, and I don't even think about it ever. Even in times of crisis, there is no going back, but neither is there any harsh judgment around people who do smoke. And when I'm around people who smoke, it just is. There is no good or bad. There is no craving, neither. So it's. I'm glad that you brought this up, because I think it's a very powerful and misunderstood modality in the mind healing, emotional healing space. So so let's fast forward. And so you did that work, and then you got diagnosed again. What happened?
Yes. And that was really challenging. Really, really challenging. I mean, I think that first emotion that came out was betrayal. I felt betrayed by my body, and there was incredible anger, thinking, you know, what else must I do now? I'm doing all of this. And again, it's important that I mention that, because these are, even in the work that we do, even with the knowledge that we have, we still have those emotions. They still come up. They're there and they're real, and you need to express them and let them out. And it's normal that they are there. Okay. So that was, you know, moving from that was then figuring out, okay, you know, how do we deal with this now? And I mean, because you've dealt with it before, and because I dealt with it holistically before, there was this kind of also realization, I can do this again. I'm strong enough. I'm not sent this because I can't cope. Obviously, I need to learn from this. There's some, I mean, if I look back from, you know, the first diagnosis, the first cancer, there was incredible self-growth from it that would not have happened had I not been diagnosed. And I recognized it for that. It was a huge life lesson that I got. I mean, I wouldn't volunteer to get it that way, but to be truthful, the intensity in self-analysis that I did after that cancer diagnosis, I would not have done that without that actual diagnosis, without the severity. You know, it's very serious, right? Mm-hmm. So knowing then, okay, there's something else. And thoughts come up going, all right, what did I not do enough of? First of all, let's pull back. Let's go. What I did, I didn't actually mention this yet. I did a combination. I did use conventional treatments, but I also did a lot of other things with it. I also saw a naturopathic doctor at the same time. I received vitamin infusions. I did a whole lot to help me cope with the treatments. And I did, at the time, I had lumpectomy the first time around, and I had chemotherapy. I refused radiation. And I also had Herceptin. My tumor markers were HER2 positive, which is only about 25% of cancers, of breast cancers, have that. It's a more aggressive breast cancer, but there is a targeted therapy available for that, which is this Herceptin, which is a series of infusions that you get every 3 weeks, similar to chemo, but for a whole year. But because it's targeted, meaning it targets only cancer cells, it doesn't affect any other healthy cells like traditional chemo does. Mm. It has side effects too, potential side effects for which you're monitored. Of course, you know, any drug does, but I'm saying the direct side effects that chemo has, they are not obvious, okay? So I was thinking, well, with my refusing radiation, was that a problem, okay? And then, of course, I didn't know in the beginning, was it a recurrence, because it was within 3 years. And it turned out, no, it actually was a different type of breast cancer. Mm. I had a friend, who we became friends because we were treated at the same time. And she had done everything. She had done everything the doctor had said, but she had done nothing holistically like I did. She actually had 3 recurrences by now.
Wow.
So here was someone who kind of followed protocol and was kind of, you know, also not exactly healing. So my argument of, did I not do enough? I mean, again, those are very real emotions. But, you know, you do what you think is right at the time, and at the right, I thought that was the right thing to do. Okay. Why did I choose a combination of conventional treatments and holistic approach? People have asked me that, said, you know, why did you do that? Why didn't you just go alternative? And I have to say that you have to understand also, going alternative only is pretty scary. There are a lot of different modalities out there. Which one do you choose? Whom do you trust? How much money can you invest in this? Because that's the one thing where you don't ever get clarity on, in terms of how much is this really going to cost me, because how long do I have to do these treatments? I think it's important to understand cancer is very serious. Once you have actively growing tumors, and whether or not they're metastasized or not, but you cannot simply approach it going, I'm going to change my diet, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. The environment inside your body in which this cancer was allowed to grow is already compromised, and it takes a very aggressive approach to change that, to do 2 things. A, you need to fight the cancer, you need to fight the tumors, and B, you need to support your internal environment. You need to support your own body so that it can fight for you. And it really depends on how severely this cancer has expressed itself, whether or not only alternative treatments will actually work. And then again, how much do you dedicate to that? You need to address it in the same aggressive way as you would if you go conventional, which, you know, conventional treatments are hugely toxic. They're very aggressive. But the alternative approach is, whatever they are, you need to be exactly the same way, very, very disciplined about it. So that can be a scary minefield for people to go into.
And that's exactly what you do today, right? Is you mentor and you guide women in their options. And can you tell us a little bit, since we're on that point about making decisions and making choices, because I can just imagine that just getting the diagnosis is like one of the scariest moments of a woman's life. I'm just like tearing up thinking about it. What do you do? Like, what's your work? Tell us about your work.
It still is lethal. And it's not lethal just in elderly people. It's lethal in people our age.
Yeah.
It can happen.
How old are you?
That's the scary part of it.
Yeah. How old are you, Kristen? You froze up there for a second.
I'm 46.
You're 46. Okay. I'm 43. So tell us about the work that you do. Speaking of, because I know you do a lot of mentoring. How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, basically, I have had a male breast cancer client as well, who are dealing with the cancer, who are combining conventional treatments with and want to combine a holistic approach. Now, what else do they do? So my mentoring comes in. I have different programs depending on where you are on the spectrum. You know, have you just been diagnosed? Obviously, my Clarity program is very different to someone who's in the middle of treatment. Which is very, very specific. We have to be very, very knowledgeable about how do we support you. To then, if you're beyond cancer, and that's actually where I have an online program as well, which I'm just about to turn into an evergreen so that it's accessible, not only when I decide to run it live, but throughout. And that really focuses on when you are done with conventional treatments. And that's when the medical team, with all due respect, but that's kind of when they drop you, and they say, you know, go ahead, see you in 6 months, here you are, keep on doing what you're doing, you know, focus on your vitamins, and they release you. They don't say anything else. They don't offer any kind of real support, you know. So it's, again, a very different phase. It's your new life. How do I now live with it? You kind of felt that you were taken care of. You know, something was being done to your cancer cells, to your body. But what now? What do I need to do? Is it going to be enough? What if, you know, what advice should I follow? There's so much anti-cancer advice out there on the internet. Which one can you trust? To try and help you, I call it reclaim your life. Mm. With some confidence, that you kind of also, you want to get to a point where you know you're doing enough. My programs, obviously, there's a physical approach to them in terms of real nutrition, targeted supplementation if necessary, if you have nutritional deficiencies. We need to be mindful of that. You know, supplements can be dangerous too. We have to really use them with caution, but sometimes they are very helpful tools for a limited time period. Okay, so the baseline is, let's figure out how to eat properly and what to look out for, and then enjoy our food. Okay, I do not want to have anyone feel deprived. We need to get you to that point where healthy eating is yum. And that's a process. I did not get to, I love my green tea today, loose green tea. I have about 10 different varieties of loose green tea. That's my thing. I did not get to the point where A, I love the taste, A, I could identify the taste of the different ones, and B, I like drinking them without it being sweetened. I did not get to that point overnight. It was a process. And that's kind of what I'm very aware of. And every client is at a different level. So we kind of pick you up where you are and then devise an action plan with manageable steps that works for them. Okay, so that's the functional nutrition side. But then we look at the conscious living, the mind, the thought, the stressors. Very important to figure out the stress in our lives, especially when we're done with our cancer treatments and reality hits again and everyone pulls back, right? Your support system, your family, your friends go, well, all right, your treatments are done, you know, you can get back to life now. But you, as a cancer survivor, life is never going to be the same. And you also feel guilty because you don't want to express that. You kind of felt that you burdened everyone enough, and you don't want to sound negative by going, life's different, I don't feel the same, I don't know really how to cope now. So very often you kind of, people clamp up and keep that inside. Meanwhile, that's exactly what we focus on, is how do we now live this new life?
Yeah.
How do we reclaim it? Okay. The emotional healing side, there are many modalities. We spoke about hypnotherapy. That's just one of them. And if someone isn't comfortable with that thought, that just doesn't mean that...
that's the only way.
They're failing on that. It just means there are other modalities, okay?
Right.
And but the concept needs to be kind of there, and I kind of introduce my clients to that. And then, of course, we do focus on some form of movement, of exercise, whatever you know, that is, I'm not an athlete myself, but, you know, we have to have movement in our life, very important. Then the whole toxicity side. So how do we reduce the toxic burden in our immediate environment, you know, through our household, through our cosmetics products? What can we do? What makes sense? What doesn't make sense, right?
What are some of your favorite toxins to talk about that a lot of even healthy women use without realizing it?
I guess, you know, it's in the skincare and the cosmetics, because I'm someone, I like to use cosmetics. I'm not going to turn away from all of that now, because I like to look good for myself. It's also something, when you're going through cancer treatments, a very important part too. You kind of want to like looking at you, and, you know, a lot of it changes. So I think it's a focus in our cosmetics, because there is so much out there. You have the basics, right? But even if you look at the organic, it's a good point. I think it's more getting to an understanding. If you produce cosmetics, if you produce a lipstick, if you produce eyeshadow, you know, you have to add certain things to it to get it to that consistency. So understanding, sifting through there again, which of the skincare products you can kind of trust and which you still need to stick away from, because even within the healthy options, sometimes they are better and you know, less better choices there. But understanding, what does it mean? It's easy to fall onto this trend of, let's stay away from, you know, all the parabens are bad. Well, some parabens occur naturally in food. You know, just create some awareness around this. Okay.
So what's your speaking of cosmetics, what's your skincare brand, cosmetic brand of choice?
I combine. I use different ones. So for my skincare, I like Dr. Hauschka. I like another German one, Annemarie Berland, but I'm also using Jolique from Australia. Mm-hmm. So they are, you know, they're different ones that I like. Okay. Cosmetics, I use Jane Eyredale, that's actually from the US. I like to use her ranges of eyeshadows. Burt's Bees, I like their little shimmering lipsticks things. So it's like more of a lip balm. I use a lot of that. It also, there's some essential oils in it, and I like that feel, bit of peppermint. And the essential perfumes made from essential oils. You know, it's funny, I had someone say to me, but it's, you know, it's so expensive. Well,
how much did you spend on your cancer treatment?
Top brand, or, you know, conventional perfume bottle, it's like, and you don't need a lot of this either. And sometimes I just use essential oils to dab and you know, because I like to smell good, and I'm doing it for myself, right? I like the scent of, I'm not personally one for unscented skincare. Luckily, I mentioned it, feeling deprived when it comes to food, but also as a woman, when it comes to the way you look and express yourself. If I would be using skincare, hair, shampoo, body lotions with no scent, I would feel deprived. I tried it, because I'm thinking, let's just get rid of all, you know, all the perfumes, everything like that, and just be natural. I was miserable, and I'll admit to that. I like having the smell around me. I just like it. Okay, so how do I make healthy choices then? And that's kind of where I can help people make those decisions, depending on what suits them. You know, we have choices. That's, I think, my main message coming across is we have choices. We just need to be educated, or be willing to be educated.
Kirsten, any other final parting thoughts that you want to share with my audience? Because they are very much like you and I, you know, it's that demographic.
I think it might sound corny, but, you know, cancer is a teacher. There's a lesson in it. And if I can speak just based on me, I would not be on this path that I'm on now with this, let me call it wisdom that I've acquired. And I'm not saying I'm all wise, I'm still learning, but there's kind of an awareness that I, and this includes my husband, it includes my children, we're all part of this. We have gained, which has made us, I don't know, a lot more appreciative of life. And you made a very important point when you said how you felt after your hypnosis, is that you're not judgmental of other people who still are. And I think that's a very, very important point. We are all the same. We are all evolving, developing, going through our experiences at our own pace when we are ready to move on. And we are all at different stages, and we have all been at the completely blinded stage, let me call it that, or just unaware stage. With I don't want it to sound judgmental. It's just we just haven't had that kind of understanding yet. So there is an infinite wisdom in us and around us, and if we are just willing to tap into this and just give ourselves permission and open ourselves up, then everyone can do that, and we can achieve tagline, by the way, I'm going to throw in, I'm developing a whole new website. I'm really very excited about that. So watch this space. It's going to be Kirsten's Can. So it's going to get there, but consciously conquering cancer. And that is, no matter where you are at that stage, I have a friend who is probably not going to make it till the end of the year, but she has conquered her cancer. And we can do that no matter what the outcome is.
The video froze earlier. What is the name? Repeat the your URL, your website, and your tagline again.
So my current website is eatholistic.com.
Okay, I'm gonna post the link down below. And then is that the new website as well?
No, the name is going to change. It's going to be kirstenscancercare.com, and the old people are still going to find me.
Okay. Well, we are having challenges with Skype today, and anyway, we tried to connect. We just actually have a second attempt of connecting, and it's still not perfect, but I think 90% of the content can be, people can fill in the gaps. And so I apologize. We tried really hard to make it work, and it's just not really 100%. Kirsten, thank you so much for your thoughts. And I just want to focus, I want to just emphasize one more thing, that you do not just work with people who've been diagnosed and going through the dilemma of making decisions, or people going through treatment, but you also do, there is, your new site is also going to have, is it going to have some stuff there about prevention?
Yes, I have a program for, I call it proactive prevention. Okay. Because that's basically, people approach me who've had mainly breast cancer in their families, yeah, or their close friends, and they kind of have this wake up moment. What can I do now? Yes. It's kind of, you know, they, which is great, you know, figuring out beforehand, is there anything I can tweak in my lifestyle now, and in my nutrition, in everything? And so I definitely have a program for that as well. And that also includes people, say, that have been in remission for 10 mm-hmm. years. I've had clients who said, I've had it 10 years ago, and I kind of feel like I've come off the bandwagon. I want to get back on track.
Yeah. Thank you. And, you know, it's I have to say, talking to you and Dr. V, one of the things that's coming up for me is that, because I think I got the food thing dialed in, skincare, cosmetics, all of that is well taken care of. It has been for a long time. But I think the emotional part is something that I've always been avoiding very, very diligently. You know? And so just talking to the two of you, you know, it's just created so much of awareness. And I do believe that in a healing path, the more we have resistance around addressing something, the more attention we need to pay on to that. And it's the same right. thing I feel with foods. It's either a person has this aversion towards, for example, eggs. Like, as a person, I never liked eggs, and fair enough, I have a sensitivity to them. But then also it can go the other way around where you have a real incredible craving, and that oftentimes happens, for example, with dairy, where we have this, this desire of gluten and sugar, right? Of like, I cannot live without those things. And when people join my programs, then you're talking about 20 grams of sugar or 5 teaspoons. I can't live like that, right? Because then they count and it's like, what? Because I've been doing, they've been doing 30 teaspoons of sugar every day. And so that's what I've realized, is the more of a resistance we have around something, the more of a shift it can create when we get rid of it. And so, or when we address it, I should say. And so, I've got some work to do on my own stuff, it seems, my own relationship with my mother is something that I deal by avoidance. And I don't think it's the way of dealing with that. So thank you for that. It's been even journey for me listening to you and Dr. V talk about these things. So thank you.
An honor being interviewed by you.
Thanks, Kristen.